Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Good morning from mild, delicious, almost sunny Jerusalem. My name is Andrea Simintov, and you are with me this morning at my kitchen table on Pull Up a Chair. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio, the only station your computer needs to be set on. What a show we have this morning. This morning we're going to be speaking with, I wish that I could say that I tripped across this in my brilliance, but I have the good fortune of having brilliant friends. And this morning we're having my very good friend, Devora Korn, on. And Devora is going to talk to us about end-of-life care, dealing with chronic illness, dealing with terminal illness, making every day count. And I'm very, very excited. I've been part of the Life Store, Gesher Lechayim organization since its inception, since it was being mapped out at another kitchen table, and I am proud. Let's see. I hope everybody's put away their menorahs. All right, don't leave them out to get all rusty and to get all blackened the silver until next year, like we usually do. And I hope that everybody is hitting the treadmill or the elliptical every morning, because I was gone until the last days. And then it was a sufganiyot, a donut attack. Something happened. They had to wrestle me out of the supermarket. The other thing that I wanted to share with you, this secular new year is winding down. And Jews get up every morning. And for us, every day is a new year. Every day is a day of reflection. So we're starting this day together. I ask you to open up the chat room. Talk to me. Let me know what's on your mind as this secular new year is closing down. And I will shout out greetings to all of you, especially our friends from overseas. I'm still waiting to hear from my Pakistani friends again. Love them. And I think that's about it. I'm going to pour another cup of coffee. And for those of you who it's night, I know that our guest is actually going to be speaking to us from Toronto. So she's probably drinking a glass of hot glug. And I'll see you on the other side.
Hey everyone, this is Ari Folder. I want to invite you all to join me on my weekly show, Bulletproof, here on Israel News Talk Radio. It's the weekly show we discover, expose, and destroy all anti-Israel propaganda that's spread throughout the universe, both from outside Israel, including also inside Israel. Join me every week, and let's defend Israel together.
Bulletproof. Live every Sunday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern time.
Welcome back. Andrea Simintov at Pull Up a Chair on Israel News Talk Radio. Good morning from Jerusalem. This week I drove to Male Adumim. Male Adumim is the road going south toward the Dead Sea, really very, very close to where I live. It looks far away. The topography changes drastically between Yerushalayim and this Male Adumim, and sometimes one forgets just the magnificence of this beautiful, beautiful country. At one point, I pulled off the road because I was having trouble breathing, because I forget. I sometimes forget. All right, what prompted this show today, we're going to be speaking with Devora Korn of Life Store, Gisha Lechayim. And what prompted it today was, A, I adore her, but B, there's been a lot of writing and a lot of talking in the news lately about the contributions that Anglos, i.e. English speakers, we came here, we all became Brits, but that Anglos have brought to Israeli society. And in order to apologize for some really sloppy governmental talk saying Anglos don't bring that much, oh, we're not that important, which most every English speaker I know would truly beg to differ. It was very lame apologies, because all of the written material that came out afterwards was showing how frequently English speakers are helping fill in the blank English speakers. They're making English speaking theater, nice, important. English speaking websites, nice, important. English speaking places for soldiers to come and put up their feet. But something hit me. We stay in our own, what we call our Dalet Amos, our four walls. And it has been very rare where English speakers, new Olim, have stepped outside of the Anglo comfort zone and really gotten their hands dirty, gotten up to the elbows in the muck, the mire, the passion of the world called Israel. And that's where Devorah Korn comes in. I'd like to say good morning, Devorah. Are you on the line?
I'm here.
Okay. Good morning. I understand that you are not speaking with us from warm and balmy Jerusalem, but rather you are in Toronto. Is that correct?
That is true. One of the challenges of being in Ola is knowing that many of your family members are not with you all the time. So we had the pleasure of spending a couple of weeks with our new granddaughter here in Toronto, heading back to Jerusalem tomorrow, though. Happily,
very with
nice. Mixed feelings, yes.
Yeah. Mazel tov. And that's going to be a different show, that difficulty, because we have people listening who really, really do care. Now, one of the things that I forgot to get to in my introduction, which is critical, before we even go on, you know, I'm scared that we're not going to have the listeners, because they say, oh my gosh, death and dying and morbidity and craziness. Some of my particular personally, happiest moments have been spent with you and your husband, Dr. Ben Korn, with the people who were living with chronic and really fatal illnesses at Life Store events. They've been the most joyous events I've been to. Can you explain this to me?
Well, in fact, you're right about that. And I think that one of the things that Ben and I, when we started our organization close to 15 years ago now, we personally recognized that that illness is part of life and getting old is part of life. And for some reason, we kind of segment those parts of society and put them in a closet. And in fact, what we began to see in our work, our professional work, is that we're missing a lot by not engaging with people who are at these very tender moments in life. And when we open up a frank conversation, which puts it all on the kitchen table, I guess I'd say, as we pull up a chair with people, we begin to see that people are people, and being sick or facing a chronic or serious or life-threatening illness, or being in your 80s and knowing that life is turning its corner and kind of winding down, are things that we really can embrace as opportunities to grow and learn and set priorities and think about what's important and really see, it sounds trite, but see the small things that really are the beauty of life.
I need to jump in here a second, because you know, we mentioned we're both live in Israel. We've both chosen to make Israel our home for a myriad of reasons. And yet, you know, I have to tell you this morning, you're going to go nuts. We have listeners, people on the line are listening in from the US, Canada, Sweden, France, Poland, the Netherlands, Germany. Do you know that we actually have Panama, Russia, and get ready, our friends in Kuwait are on the line this morning. And it suddenly is dawning. Good morning, friends. And it's dawning on me that what you're talking about is not an indigenously Jewish topic. It's not an Israeli topic. The fear, the aura, the avoidance of discussions about death and end of life. Would you say that this is typical all around the world?
For sure. I mean, as humans, I think we're very threatened by thinking that there's a day that we won't be. I think it's hard for us to even imagine the day that any of us won't be. One of the most powerful parts of our work is that it brings people together. You know, you see our work in hospitals and in long-term care settings and in clinics, and you see people who would never find themselves in conversations. In their wildest imaginations, they would never think they'd have anything in common. You see professionals and patients breaking down the barriers and just being human beings. And it's exciting. I'm so thrilled to hear that there are people from all over the world, because LifeStore has benefited from the startup mentality of Israel. You know, we came for 20
explain
years
this,
ago.
Explain this. This is a new, it's a new, you know, it says life, startup nation. Okay.
Yeah.
How does that work?
You know, you come to Israel, we did about 21 years ago with a great idea. A lot of people have great ideas. A lot of people have great ideas that they try and succeed and try and fail. One of the amazing parts about living in Israel, and one of the most exciting parts for me as a person who moved to Israel, is that there is this lack of fear of risk-taking indigenous in Israeli society, probably because of the climate we live in, and I don't mean the physical temperature. But also, I think that there's a sense of unity, that people feel we're in something very big, very exciting, very historical. And so the moment is just so powerful that you want to try new things. There's an energy, whether it's, you know, Waze, having all the technology of Waze, you know, the navigation system or a lot of the high tech stuff, or on the social service level. You know, we came with an idea and we found people willing to help us. In, as you say, you know, Anglos tend to stick with Anglos. We found people from every background you can imagine. We work with the Russians, and we have people from, of course, Israelis who are born and bred many generations, who all say, you know, this is our human struggle. Like, how do we live every day with meaning? How do we know that we do right for the people who are aging in our midst? How do we know that when we get to those junctures, we're going to be treated the way we want? And all of a sudden, this passion, everybody kind of rolled up their sleeves with us and said, you know, there's an idea here. Let's work together on kind of finding some tools, and let's find some models. And in fact, that's what we did. Now we have about 5 platform programs that are being shared all around the world.
Right. We're not going to discuss, we're not going to mention those platform programs yet, because we're winding down this particular segment and we're going to hit it on the other side. But you said something, Devora, which absolutely was like a thunderbolt. And you said people were willing to try. And I always found that Israel really is a small sea where large ideas can, if you are proactive, that really can be given an opportunity to foster. In America, if you had stayed in America and brought your idea, first of all, you'd have to probably, well, you can tell me better, that you probably really have to mire, you know, go through the muck of already brilliant ideas to find the right source. In Israel, we're very, very young and yet very, very old. I mean, 3,000 years versus, you know, almost 70. So you really had, talk about that a bit.
Yeah, I think Israeli society is more nimble. I think, you know, it's easy to navigate. I mean, the fact that, you know, our government, you know, is a stone's throw from my Jerusalem apartment. Mm-hmm. And I can say that since I've lived in Israel, I've had open, cordial conversations with dozens of Knesset members, dozens, who have, you know, had an interest in our work.
And it's because they still buy milk. They buy milk at the corner grocery still.
And they get sick, and they have family members who are getting sick, and they have children, unfortunately, who are struggling with illness. And so, you know, when you talk to, and you can get to these people very easily. It's not like you have to create a, you know, a major lobby group to talk to these people. These are regular people who are, you know, 2 points of separation maybe from any of us. And if you touch a soft spot, which has meaning and is relevant, usually, not among everybody, but usually you'll get an open ear if you really have a good idea. And on the other side of the coin, you know, you have people who have fortunately been creative and doing lots of ventures in different areas, and they get excited about new ideas. There's a sense that if you have something new, a new idea is something we want to be part of. I know it myself. You know, you walk around some communities and you'll see these buildings with high-tech companies. And there's something very alluring about seeing these think tanks growing all over the place. You know, I have a scene in my mind where I had a friend visiting a few years ago, and we were driving up the Jerusalem Road past Har Chotzvim, one of the major high-tech centers in Jerusalem.
That's right. Our Silicon Valley, yeah.
Yeah, you'll see all the big names that you see in Silicon Valley. And to the hill next to it, what do you see but a shepherd with goats? You know, it hadn't changed. 3,000 years, they look exactly the same. The goats are from the same lineage, and the shepherd looks the same. And you see this paradox, and you realize there's something on one hand, which is very new and fresh and exciting and wanting to do new things and really, really succeeding. And then you see a certain kind of stability, I guess I'd say, of things that just haven't changed. And I feel that that paradox is what really is the foundation for a lot of this, the new ideas. And we're very rooted. There's something
Deborah,
about it that feels rooted.
Deborah, I want you to hold that thought, because we're going to be taking a break really in a few moments. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what medicine tells us end of life should be.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country from Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
And we are back. Andrea Simintov, Pull Up a Chair is the name of my show. It is the meaning of my life, my personal mantra. And you are listening to Israel News Talk Radio. We are on the line with Deborah Korn, co-founder, creator, guru, and really people-loving creator of Life Store, Gisha L'Chaim, an organization that doesn't just help, but orchestrates and embraces people who are living with chronic and terminal illness and embracing their families. Deborah, are you on the line?
I'm happy to be here.
Okay. So I came across a beautiful quote as part of your materials. Of course, I had to print out an entire page in color, you know, which cost a lot of money on those PDFs. But anyway, the quote was so incredible. I've cut it out and I put it on my front door. And the quote was from a professor, Atul Gawande of Harvard University. And he says it so simply: in medicine, we prioritize health, safety, and survival. We often sacrifice the very reasons people want to be alive. And it reminds me of people signing disclaimers, the DNR, do not resuscitate, the being kept alive by machine, not having people that they love around them, not being allowed familiar scents and sounds. Talk to me about that. What is medicine doing? Are we just trying to outrace the clock and forgetting about people? What do you think?
Well, you know, for sure we have to be grateful for a lot of the advances in medicine and the technology that has brought us a lot of health. You know, people don't die the way they did before penicillin, for instance, etc. So there's a lot of good that's going on in medicine. And certainly, you know, my husband, Ben, an oncologist, would tell you 60% of cancers are cured today. So that's the good side. But at the same time, what we've seen over the past 20 and 30 years is technology just taking the place of humanism. And Atul Gawande's quote is very powerful. And if you hear it between the words, what he's basically saying is there's a person behind the illness. There's a person with values, a story, a narrative very unique to that person. And you know, listeners, I'll tell you, you know, how often have you gone to a doctor's office or into an emergency room for yourselves or somebody you love, and not really been thought about as a human being? You know, does somebody say to you, you know, what do you do in your life? Does somebody say to you, what do you need to do tomorrow? Does somebody say to you, you know, what's important to you? What are your hobbies? What are your interests? Okay, so of course, you know, their priority is to patch you up maybe if you fell, or set your arm if you broke a bone. But really, at the same time, and particularly if you were a person who spent a lot of time in a hospital because you had a lot of illnesses going on, you would want people to understand why you want that arm fixed. And you would want people to understand what choice you might want to make versus another one, because things are complicated. You know, people talk about treatment choices and DNR. You mentioned that, Andrea. People get very scared when they hear the words end of life. So I'm going to not, I won't talk about end of life. I'm going to talk about life, just life. Every day in life, we are lucky to wake up and step out of our beds if we can on 2 feet, and breathe normally, right? That's a great thing.
Wait, can I just jump in here one moment? Because I need to hand the listeners a picture. I've been to some of your Life Store events. And I remember the fear driving to them, thinking, my gosh, I'm going to be in a room of people who are dying. The smell of death, the wafting people, the bleakness. And I was drawn into spaces that were so alive, so vibrant, so fun, so out of control with laughter. And yet the presence, the umbrella of that, this was an end of life coping session, was never absent. It wasn't gone for a moment, but there was so much variety and the menu was enormous while standing beneath that umbrella.
That's right. I mean, not to sugarcoat illness. Illness is terrible. Illness is awful. I mean, who wants to be sick, and who wants to be really sick, and who wants to be told by their doctor, you know, you have something we can't fix? It's awful. Right. But at the same time, there's every day where we make choices. And when we make those choices about everything we do. If the people that are caring for us, whether they're medical professionals or our loved ones who are helping us with our care, if we're in a place where we're not well.
Who also need help. They don't have the dance steps.
No, of course, they're primary targets to be the next patients if we don't help them. Absolutely. But if all of these conversations aren't about what is important to me as a human being? Why do I want to get well? What is it that makes my life have meaning tomorrow? If those conversations aren't brought in, then the decisions aren't so relevant, you know? And as you said, are we all just buying time? I mean, is it just to log another day? What does that day want to look like? And for many people, there are choices that might mean, well, one treatment versus another. You know, if somebody gives me 4 days, but those 4 days are horrific because I'm either sleeping the whole time or I'm in such acute pain that I can't enjoy one thing that's important to me, then maybe a different treatment choice might be better for me. And maybe that one day that I'll have would be an amazing day because I could hug my grandchildren or take a long walk on the beach or sit and read a book that I'm absolutely want to read. And so for people that don't have those conversations, the decisions get very distorted. And for us, it's very, very much about the continuum. I mean, talking about end of life on our last day is too late. What we're talking about is living.
Wait. Repeat that. I want you to repeat that. I want you to lower the tone in your voice because you have now, if they hear nothing else out of this marvelous program, Pull Up a Chair on Israel News Talk Radio, that is the line I want them to hear. Say it again, Devorah.
I'll say it again.
Yeah.
Talking about end of life on the last day is too late. Talking about death on your last day of your life, you missed the boat. We're talking about living with an awareness that we're mortal. We're not talking about talking about death all day. We're talking about living and saying, if every day is a gift and every day that I have where I can do things, I want to make wise choices, meaningful choices, mindful choices, then I need to do this all throughout my life because one day I won't have those choices. And that's what we're talking about in Life Store. When we talk about living with illness, we're not talking about focusing on the illness. We're saying, put it on the table. I've got something that's in my way. This illness is causing me an obstacle, whatever that might be.
Okay.
And then we want to say, what's important to you as a human being? You know, we began to do work about a year ago with about 4 institutions around the world, the Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, Duke University. I mean, really nice places, Tel Aviv University, of course. And what we began to work on is something that you would never believe people hadn't talked about in healthcare. When Ben Korn, my husband, brought this up, I was shocked. Nobody had even done research on this.
Okay.
You know what they didn't talk about? Hope.
Tell me.
Hope.
Yes, wait a second. Whoa. This is critical to me because I don't, help me. It's all throughout your literature. I've been to the conferences and we say, talking about hope. Isn't it hopeless? What is hope? What role does hope play in this? At the end of the day, we're going to be 6 feet under a pile of ashes. What is to hope for?
And that's the question that everybody has to ask themselves. What do I hope for? My hope is different than your hope. Every listener on this news radio show now has a different hope. When I wake up in the morning, what do I hope for today? And if I were sick, would that hope be different? If I were sick, would my hope be the same or different? You know, for most people, it's pretty basic and it doesn't change all that much. What gives me meaning in my life maybe will be a little different if I were not well. But the core values that we have, that's generally what drives our hope. You know, the choices might look a little different, but they're based on what is really important to me, you, my neighbor. And everybody needs to ask that question. You know, we sit around in our hope workshops. We have something called the Hope Enhancement Project. And we work with, you're not going to believe this, people who are diagnosed, in some cases women, with end-stage cancer. Really right. Bad diseases, where their doctors have said, you know what, we really don't have much treatment to offer you, which is absolutely the worst thing to hear. And, you know, kind of pack your bags and go home, like terrible. And all of a sudden we say, you know what, you're here. And, you know, many of them, you'd never even know they were sick, by the way. They look totally like fine, but inside they've got some awful tumor growing, let's say. And we have had these seminars on hope where these women walk out saying, you know what, I've got things to do.
Okay, wait a second. We have a minute and a half left. What do they walk out with? Why are they upbeat?
Because they have hope. Their hope is not defined by, is the treatment going to cure my disease? The hope is defined by what gives my life meaning today or tomorrow. Because I have today and tomorrow. I have a week or a month or maybe 6 months. And I'm not going to sit here and say, well, just because the doctor can't cure my disease, I'm not going to have a reason to wake up in the morning.
You're talking about viability. They're still viable.
Every moment is viable. You know, we've had patients who are lying in their beds, just accessing a computer, the way we're all online with you, feeling very enriched because they're part of a community. They're sharing ideas. Now, their doctor might have said, well, that's a pretty hopeless situation. But I would guarantee you that the people that they're in conversations with are so grateful for their involvement in their life. And it's reciprocal. It comes back. You know, older people who are lying in beds where nobody talks to them, it's outrageous. Do we want to be in that situation? Wouldn't we want somebody to talk to us and say, what was your life about? What gave you a story?
Okay,
that's hope.
Unbelievable. So when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about, is it different for people? Is illness, fear of mortality, is this a great unifier? Is it a divider? We're going to talk about some of the different people who participate in your workshops and what tomorrow is all about. Speaking with Devorah Korn from Life Store, Gisha L'Chaim, and we'll be back.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany's but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Andrea Simintov, Jerusalem. You are listening to Pull Up a Chair. It is almost 8 o'clock in the morning and the sun is shining and all is well with the world. I'm on the line with my friend and someone who I admire greatly, Devorah Korn, co-founder of Life Store, Gisha L'Chaim. And before I ask her, actually, I'm going to seduce her into asking an uncomfortable question. I wanted to say that when I was in junior high school, in the gym, I remember all the white girls, we would have to put on these hideous gym outfits, these hideous yellow bloomers, and we would divide teams with little aprons called pinnies. And we were not athletic. Some of us were particularly ungainly, including your host of this show. And whereas the black girls separated in the gym, and they did their own thing, and they danced, and I wanted to dance with them, but I couldn't. I've thought about the same thing when I go to the motor vehicles department here. It seems that, very funny, the Arabs waiting to be taken care of sort of sit in their own group. They have their own rows, and then the Jews go and find their own place. So Devorah Korn, we seem to be, wherever we go, people like to kind of rub shoulders with their own. They're familiar. They know the language, the talk, the heartbeat, the laughter, the jokes. So are we talking, when we talk about Gisha L'Chaim, life's door, are we talking about something that's particular to Jewish Israeli residents of Israel?
Far from it. First of all, Jewish Israeli residents of Israel are a part of Israeli society, but we have such a diverse society. When we think about Israel, we have people from literally every continent around the globe, and people come from all different cultures. But one of the things that unites us all is that we're all human. We all get sick. We all have family members who will be ill and will leave us, as we will, from this earth.
I just wanted to jump in just one quote. I remember, you know, for many years I worked for a very popular, very effective nonprofit organization that helps families with children who have severe special needs. And I remember that one of the quotes we said was, special needs does not discriminate.
Everybody's on that.
And I thought about the same thing with regard to illness.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we talked about earlier in this segment, in this show, was how in Israel we've had the benefit of being kind of an incubator for ideas. And so when we try out different models of how to help people with illness or how to train doctors, we train doctors how to talk to people with illness. We train people, doctors, how to live with daily, to be a doctor or a nurse every day and see sick people. It could be a real downer. Do you know that 400 doctors in America committed suicide in 2016? That's a lot of doctors that are really, in some way, deeply affected by the difficulty of their work. So in Israel, we have the benefit of having somewhat of an incubator to develop ideas. But these ideas, they're out there for the whole world to share. And the exciting thing is that it actually brings people together who have never been brought together. You know, I won't deny Israel's a controversial place. I don't think there's a day that the paper doesn't talk about Israel. It's a hotbed.
Oh, really? Oh, control yourself.
Yes. It's a hotbed. It's a hotbed. Yeah. But this is something which kind of turns it all on its head and says, well, yeah, with all the strife and the conflict in the region in which we live, we also have some very powerful tools that we can share with the world that are non-political, non-sectarian, that are just there for people to improve their lives. And about a year ago, we launched a program called Creating Caring Communities Together. And basically what that does is it takes communities all around the globe, New Jersey, California, South Africa, Australia, and helps professionals learn skills, helps family members learn skills, and links them to us here in Israel, which is so amazing to say we all have what to learn from each other when it comes to this difficult nut to crack, which we call life and death. Nobody's figured it out. I'm not saying we have all the answers, but
you know,
we're trying
I wanted to jump in here and say, and I would imagine that if I were, you know, an older man, an older Arab man from the community of Farida or Tor Bachar, and I needed to be spoken to, I would imagine that to have a doctor, an Arab doctor, speaking to me in Arabic would perhaps bring me and my wife and my children more comfort than some Eastern European, Bimakor, wonderfully equipped doctor from Ramat Aviv.
And it's true.
Yeah.
I think you're right that we are all comfortable with what's familiar. That's
true. I'm like hanging out with New Yorkers. I don't like
it's
them.
It's true.
But I am them.
We like familiarity, but more than anything, and I will say this from our experience and my personal experience, many, many years working with people who are sick, more than anything, when we're in a crisis, yes, we like familiar, but more than anything, we want compassion, we want support, We want somebody to listen to us. We want somebody to validate our pain. We want somebody to hear about our hopes and dreams. That's what we want when we're in a bad place. Yeah, we want somebody who, you know, knows about the village and the stew that our mothers made. And it's great to talk about those things with people who are caring for us. But more than anything, we want a doctor or a nurse to look in our eyes when we're struggling with fear and say, I'm with you. I'm not leaving you. And just because you're an Arab doctor or not is not going to make the difference. But if you're an Arab doctor who has been trained to sit with a patient and be genuine and not worry about the fact that you're a human being and not feel that you have to build a barrier in order to be a good professional, but the opposite, to be open and human. If you're that doctor, that's going to be the thing that's going to help the patient. Unfortunately, being a healthcare provider, and you know, Ben Koren is an example, but he's only one of a few, to say you don't have to build a barrier to be a good healthcare provider. But being a healthcare provider oftentimes for some people translates into, let's have a distance from our patients. Let's not get hurt by the fear. Let's protect ourselves. And what we've said and we've shown over the years is that it's not an either or equation. You can be the consummate professional with all the great book smarts and all the knowledge and really be able to have a certain level of distance. You know, you don't want your doctor falling apart in front of you, but to open your eyes and say, this is a human being who's suffering, and I want to be able to feel a little bit of that so I can be there with him to help him.
Okay, so we have 4 minutes left, and I want to lure you into two places. I remember hearing, and you can just say yes or no, I remember that your husband, Dr. Ben Koren, actually found himself going toward oncology because he lost his own father to cancer at a very early age, and no one talked to him. No one talked to him or his brother or his sister, and all around them, the mystery of death and quiet and bleakness was happening, and he swore to himself that he would make sure that there was candor in those. Did I get that correct?
That's definitely where the seeds of this organization started. You know, when a boy of 11 years old, and he was a pretty bright kid, I guess. I didn't know him then. But when he begins to struggle with, you know, the meaning of life and the idea that his dad at all of age of 52 would suddenly, because his experience without knowing in advance was basically, for Ben, it was a sudden loss, even though he had been sick for a while, would suddenly be taken from him. It turned his life on its head, and I guess, you know, we're all fortunate because that was the seeds of life's door. But it took a good 10 plus years for him to really get to a place, and as a young medical student and a young doctor, to be able to look into the world of medicine through different eyes and to really stand tall and say, we have things that we need to improve because we're just not doing a good enough job for the people we're serving.
All right.
You have to learn that on your own skin sometimes.
Oh, I love that, on your own skin. So listen, because we're winding it down, we're going to end with a story, but I want to make sure, because we're going to do a wrap up, and I post all of the pertinent websites and contact information, but anybody listening with a pen in their hand, if they have questions that they need to put to Devorah Koren at Life Store, they should write to they should go into the website, www.lifestore, no apostrophe, one word, lifestore.org, or contact Devorah. She will get back to you directly, and her email address is pdkorn, C-O-R-N, at lifestore, one word, .org. Devorah, we're coming to the end of the show. Tell me a story.
Well, there's so many stories I can't even begin to choose, but the one that comes to mind is about a year and a half ago, a group Hope Enhancement Workshop that we ran in Tel Aviv. This was about 15 people, all of which have serious illnesses, most of which doctors have told them are non-curable. And tough work. People roll up their sleeves. They learn a lot of things. And at one point, one man, very angry, close to 40, said, I don't know what we're talking about here about hope. My doctor told me I'm probably not going to live very long, and I'm probably not going to see the 12-year-old birthday of one of my children. I have no hope. At which point, one of the other people in the group, a woman, about 32 years old, diagnosed with a brain tumor, said, what do you mean you don't have hope? Of course you have hope. Everybody has hope. What do you wake up? What do you want to do? What's important to you? And he said, well, there's a lot important to me. And I've always wanted to be a writer. And ever since I was diagnosed, I haven't been able to pick up a pen, write a page, nothing. Well, they did some work in the Hope Workshop. he got calmer. A few days later, apparently he went home. And I didn't know anything about what happened to the rest of the story until about 6 months passed, and I met his wife after he had died. And I said, you know, it's such a privilege to meet your husband. He said, privilege? It changed his life, what happened that day. He couldn't think, and all of a sudden, everything was different. That Hope Workshop made him a writer again, and it changed all my life, it changed his life, it changed our children's lives. She had tears in her eyes, and I said to her, I just want to tell you, you know, I never hear the back end of some of these stories. And she said, this isn't the end of the story. You know, we now have just such beautiful memories. So when you think about people when they're at their, quote, end of life, every day is a choice, and every day is an opportunity to live with hope and meaning. And that's just one example of thousands I could give you.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart, Devorah Korn. Thank you so much for being on Bulletproof Chair.
Thank you.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.